Hi, this is Bruce Ryder, Five Finger Death Punch, and you're listening to the Jay Franzi Show.
Welcome to the Jay Franzi Show, a behind-the-curtain look at the entertainment industry with insights you can't pay for and stories you've never heard. Now, here's your host, Jay Franzi.
Well, hello and welcome to the show. I am Jay Franzi, and this is your backstage pass to the entertainment industry. This week, we get to talk with a recording artist. We get to talk with Darian Lee. We'll talk to her about what it was like attending CRS, what it's like playing at Jason Aldean's, and we'll discuss a vocal scare that nearly ended her career. Now, Darian, she's an amazing singer, a songwriter, and I can't wait to talk with her tonight. So if you would like to join in, comment, or fire off any questions, please head over to jfranzi.com. Now, let's get started. Miss Darian, how are you?
Hello, I'm good. How about you?
I am fantastic. I've been looking forward to this one. I am so excited.
Me too.
I would like to just jump in. I know we only have a limited time tonight, about 4 hours, I think it was. And I want to make sure that we get everything in tonight. But before we do, let's just start with, can you tell me what your experience at CRS was like this year?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. CRS is always such a whirlwind because you see all these familiar faces and people that you haven't met yet. And there's just so much mingling that it feels like it is really 3 days, but it feels like it goes by so fast. And I had so much fun at CRS this year. I've enjoyed all of them, but this year felt very fun in the way of just like chaos. It was just pure chaos all the time, running in every direction.
Well, can you tell us what CRS even stands for?
Yeah, CRS is Country Radio Seminar. So it's a place for artists to meet with radio hosts and radio hosts to kind of see all of the things that are scaled out for that year and to meet with artists as well. And it's really kind of like a reunion, honestly, for all of us to see each other. It's so fun.
People don't realize that there's things like this that even exist where artists go and mingle with radio stations and hosts and so on.
Right.
And you say you get, it's like a reunion because you even get to see your class, your fellow artists that you're growing up with.
Right.
So what was your most exciting piece of that seminar this year?
Ooh, I typically miss all of the actual speeches in the seminars, I guess you would call them. But I was able to get to Megan Maroney's, which honestly was very inspiring. I was just standing by the door by the time that it opened. And I was like, you know, I don't have an interview for the next hour. And I'm kind of just running around. And that would be a great place to sit still and listen to somebody that I listen to continuously. And I really enjoyed listening to that. Obviously enjoyed everything else. But it was rejuvenating in the way that I walked away feeling very inspired.
What did you learn from it?
She just talked about social media and kind of made it seem a bit less deep than I oftentimes view social media as. And by saying it feels deep is like just all the work that goes into it. And sometimes I can cook something up in my own head to be something where I have to have it perfect and all these things. And she's like, just post, like just do your thing and share what you're doing and just let people into your life, which I knew all of these things, but hearing it from someone as successful at a similar age to me was really, really nice.
Well, that's pretty cool to, like you said, learn from somebody like that. But
yeah,
I mean, you have quite a bit of a social following yourself right now. I mean, you've got thousands of followers across all your platforms.
Right.
I mean, how much time do you actually spend participating in social media?
Oh, so much that I don't look at my screen time anymore because it is kind of a bittersweet thing to look at. It's almost a double-edged sword because I know it's work technically, right? But it doesn't always feel like that because sometimes I'm also just scrolling and maybe somebody new followed me and I'm like kind of stalking them for a second. That's what we do. It's fun. But I spend a lot of time on social media.
Well, for you, it's part of your job, right? So, I mean, mm-hmm. Put in 8 hours in a day. So if you're right. 8 hours on social, I mean, that's not bad, right?
Right.
Well, it's all in how you look at things.
It's true.
So which platform is your favorite?
I spend a lot of time interacting with people on Instagram, but I do spend a lot of time watching TikTok and kind of taking notes as well as just doom scrolling.
So when you're on these platforms, and I'm only asking because I mean branding and personal branding as an artist, you know, the development is very important.
Right.
And it's all about image. So do you spend a lot of time worrying about your image when you're on social media?
I wouldn't say worried, but I spend a lot of time focused on what I'm putting out. And I always feel like my image and my branding is really just me at a core. Like it's just me and maybe an enhanced version is what my branding is. So I always feel if I'm sharing who I truly am on social media, then I'm doing the right thing at the end of the day.
Well, you truly are diverse. I mean, you have one absolute wide range of interests, which I think is pretty cool.
Thank you.
I mean, you are an outdoors person for sure. I mean, and what I've noticed just me going through your social media, stalking you,
right?
Because that's what we do.
It's what we do.
But I noticed you're a fan of hockey and you're from Minnesota. Does that play into being a fan of hockey?
Absolutely. Absolutely it did. I mean, I grew up 30 minutes from Hockey Town, USA. So hockey is everything in Minnesota. And it's just the sport that is probably the most obtainable because it's cold.
Yeah.
Almost 9 months out of the year. So
that's funny. I had an opportunity. I almost moved to Minnesota for work 1 year. And my wife's like, oh, yeah, let's try it. I'm like, you have no idea. You have no idea what that weather is going to be like.
Oh, it's brutal sometimes, but it is so beautiful.
I mean, I'm from Boston, which is also another cold area, but it's also a big hockey area.
So,
I'm a Boston Bruin through and through. But I lived in Nashville for 20 years as well, working in the industry, and I went to all the Predators games. Matter of fact, I was there the first year the Predators started, and I went to every single game that year without having season passes. I was just a dumbass. I bought tickets every game. So how often do you go to the Predators games?
I've actually only made it to one so far. I was able to go to one last year, and they were playing the Minnesota Wild. So, of course, I was proudly wearing my Wild jersey and was graced with all the lovely chants against the Wild. But I couldn't go to a game where they're playing my home state and choose Nashville in accordance to. I will always choose Nashville over all the other teams, but when it comes to Minnesota, I can't do it. It's my birthplace. They might disown me.
I am so glad you said that. I am living in Cincinnati right now. And being from Boston, big Red Sox fan. When you're from Boston, you have to love every Boston team through and through, no matter what.
Right.
So the Red Sox came here and played the Reds. And I went to the game and put on my Red Sox hat. My wife was like, what are you doing? And we're going to get killed. And I'm like, no. And I said, I expect you to wear yours too. So we went, and there was more Red Sox hats at that game than there were Reds. So, I mean, we were fine. But
shockingly enough, I feel like it typically works like that too.
All right, let's get back to you and back to music here. I know transitioning from Minnesota to Nashville is going to be tough. What was the biggest challenge you faced there?
Ooh, because I'm from such a small town, traffic and existing in places where there are so many people was the most unique challenge for me. Not because I'm not around a lot of people a lot, because on stage you have a variance of an amount of an audience, but purely because I didn't have even a stoplight in my hometown. So moving here where there's in fact many stoplights and probably quadruple the amount of cars around you at all times was the easily the biggest change, I guess you could say, for me.
When I moved to Nashville, it was still a pretty small town. I mean, the city was there, the strip was there, Broadway and everything. Music Row still existed.
Right.
But then as the years went on, it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And now even when I go back to work or to visit, the skyline's different. Every time I go back, I mean, everything's different. And the traffic, oh my God, the difference
it's
in
so
traffic.
It's so bad. That's what I mean. I didn't even have a stoplight. So I'm going from zero stoplights to the most traffic I would have was a train coming by once or twice a day to moving here. And it's just nonstop traffic.
Speaking of Broadway, what's it like playing at Jason Aldean's?
Oh, I love it. It's one of my favorite places to play.
Why is that?
I think because the energy, and I have the best of both worlds in the hour that I was playing there in the 6 to 10, because you get the dining hour because it's in the dining room, but it also gets fun towards that last like hour and a half where they take the tables away and everybody's just having a really good time. And there's something just about the environment of that bar specifically that I feel like people walk in and they're like, all right, cool. This is what this is all about. We get to have a good time.
Yeah, it is pretty cool there. So at Jason's place there, what kind of trends have you seen playing there over time? Like, what does the tourist audience expect to hear and see?
Ooh, it kind of comes and goes in waves. There is a never-ending desire for the older country music, which I love. But you'll see a lot of, honestly, Megan Maroney, Tennessee Orange, a lot of songs about the color orange,
Zach
Bryan, Something in the Orange. A lot of those, Hardy is a big one right now. Morgan Wallen obviously is huge, right? Everybody wants to hear his stuff. Really anything that's making it big on radio and is going around on TikTok, we're being asked to play.
So are you finding that playing this music is influencing your own style?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot to be said about honing in on your craft, even if it is playing other people's music. I've learned so much playing downtown and the stage experience, let alone, but also, like you're saying, finding my own style. And I really kind of realized what I like to sing and how I like to sing and what kind of show I want when I'm playing my originals based off of what do these songs, when I'm playing them and the people's reactions, what are those like? And then I kind of channel that into what I want to write, because maybe I want to write something that makes people feel the same way.
So on that note, what is it that's been working its way into your songwriting process?
A lot of, honestly, a lot of the pop references, and not abandoning country in any way, but the new wave Kelsea Ballerini sort of a thing.
So I asked you about your songwriting process and what's working its way into it, but what is your actual process? How do you write?
For me, it can be very different every time. There's typically the same things that you check off a box. If I'm writing by myself, it can be triggered by just about anything. It can just be something somebody says and I'm like, oh, that's a song in itself, or I'm feeling some type of a way and I start. I'm normally a pick up the guitar and I kind of strum a little bit, and then if I have words, that's when I put them out and I just start building the melody and everything just goes from there. Otherwise, when it's co-writing, we typically work with tracks. So you come in and you list off your ideas and you see what the mood is for the day and what people are wanting to write about. And you start the melody and they hit the track and you just listen to that loop over and over again and you write over it.
That's pretty cool too, right?
It's so cool.
Are you writing with a publishing house?
I'm not right now. I write at publishing offices, but I'm not currently myself.
So these people that you're writing with, where are you meeting them?
A lot of the times it'll be at one of our places, but more often times than not, I'm not personally signed with the publisher, but some of them are. So we'll go to their publishing offices.
So if you had an idea for music, do you come in with your guitar and play it?
Yeah. What I would do personally is I come in with my guitar and I'll play it and they perfect it and hone in on it and they lay it down on the track. Sometimes I might end up being the person that plays on it, but most commonly I'm not. So somebody else is doing it. They got that oomph behind them.
No, I definitely, after working there for so many years, I understand that process for sure. But
right,
when it comes to writing though, obviously you got to do what you're comfortable with and you're comfortable on a guitar.
Right.
So when you're putting these melodies together, which is coming first for you, the lyric or the melody?
A little bit of both. It's typically 50-50. Sometimes I have a melody in mind and I record it on my notes app. Right. And then I'll write it down. I have a big ongoing note of all the different things that I want to write about. And it can go either way. Sometimes it's the words and sometimes it's the melody. There's not much of a rhyme or reason for me when it comes to that.
Do you find it more challenging to write by yourself or with a co-writer?
I think sometimes by myself, just because I'm harder on myself when I don't have another opinion. But I also really love writing alone too, because I dig a little bit deeper emotionally. Especially when it's maybe not somebody you've written with as much. A lot of the people I write with, I've written with for quite a bit. So we just get each other, our guards are down. But by myself, sometimes I think I'm a little more willing to be transparent emotionally.
All right. Can you give any sort of example of something that went a little deeper?
Yeah, I think my song 10,000 Miles is the best example of something that was very emotionally struck in for me. It was really written like a diary entry. I wrote it in 10 minutes on the bathroom floor of a hotel room. pen and paper style. It wasn't even on my phone. We ditched the phone. We grabbed the guitar. We grabbed pen and paper, and I just wrote it on the floor, and it was done. And I think the reason why that one is connected with people so much is because it is so emotionally involved for me.
Tell us about the story of it.
Yeah. So 10,000 Miles is about my boyfriend, who's in the Marine Corps at the time, was on a deployment. And I was kind of in the thick of that. Wow, I can't talk to this person. I feel very alone. And since releasing it, I realized I was obviously very much so not alone. There are many people that feel that. And it's a very unique circumstance, too. Everybody has different layers to it. And some people are married and some people have kids involved. And it is such an emotional time when you are not with someone and you're not able to speak to them and you don't even know where they are. And you're so vulnerable in the fact of just missing them and being alone. And being able to write that song, I think, for me, was very therapeutic. And then literally the next day I recorded it. It was right at that night. Next day we tracked vocals, and then it was full band on it the day after that. I think it was good for me at the time to hear it come to life in that exact time from when I wrote it to when we recorded it, because it was making myself admit to the things that I didn't want to admit to other people. And releasing it also helped me realize that there is a lot of people that go through that.
Well, you've been with your boyfriend for quite some time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So how long was he in the Marines? How long were you away from him?
He was in the Marines for 2.5 years active duty while we were together. We've been together for 5 years, so nearly half.
5 years, and that's quite a bit for somebody who's as young as you. So, I mean, that's
yeah.
That's pretty cool. And I say as young as you because I'm as old as I am.
Young at heart, right?
No.
No.
No, not at all. I'm married and have 3 kids. Every part of me is old. Every part of me is old. So do you find that song to have a special place in your heart because of all of that?
Yeah, very much so. I don't always write from that vulnerable of a place. Typically, it's a co-write where we're just having fun. And sometimes we might be crying too, but I'm a sucker for a sad song, and I feel like I write my best sad songs like sitting on the floor with my guitar and just laying it all out.
I can understand that. I mean, I seem to write the sappy love songs, the just
right.
Depressing songs. I listen to all right. The heavy, hard rocking songs, but I write all the sappy stuff. It's just crazy to me.
It's weird how it works out.
Yeah, it really is. So, like I mentioned, you are young, and you're like knocking down doors and you're making such progress. It's just amazing to me. So
thank you.
Like, what do you feel is allowing you to break into the industry so easily?
I think for me, it's just a lot of determination. I am a very stubborn person, which I guess works to my
right.
favor in that, but also today's day and age with social media, to bring it back to what we started our conversation on. Social media is huge, and the advantage of having the connection with so many people in the literal palm of your hand, just swiping on a device, is honestly unfathomable sometimes. I think about the reach that you have so quickly, and it is wild to conceive and think about. And I think that's honestly a huge reason as to why I've been able to open up doors that maybe would have otherwise taken longer.
Do you feel like because of social media and because of all of that, you're able to connect with your fan base better and build a fan base quicker?
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're able to reach that much more people.
So when you're doing that, and like I mentioned, you have a wide range of interests, right? So when you're doing this, do you feel like that wide range of interest is helping you or hurting you?
People sometimes say you can't be all things to all people, and I do think that's true. But I also think everybody is unique, and we all have many interests, and maybe some people it's more individual to certain things and not as wide, but I think it gives you more things in common with people. Like, I like to dip my toes in a lot of different things, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, but when you have something that you can talk about with someone where you're kind of on the same page and you're able to connect on that, I think that's huge. Because when you're talking to somebody, you just want something to relate about. And the second you find something with a stranger that you both know something about, you're going to talk about that for however long you decide to. So I think it's definitely an advantage.
No, I can see that for sure. And I mean, I believe there's a quote somewhere in your ecosystem here that says, you know, about being on a red carpet and also being in camo.
So, yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about that for a second?
Yeah, I'm the youngest of four. I have three older brothers, and my parents were pretty determined to raise me like they raised my brothers. So, hunting and all things outdoors, fishing, all of that has been a part of my life since as young as I can remember. And I think that's really where that stems from for me. And there's an appreciation for what you're able to put on the table when you're able to think about all the work that goes into getting it there. And I'm very appreciative of my parents for giving me that realization, especially when it comes to going to the grocery store and buying like meat. And I know where that came from. There's an education there.
Well, in Minnesota, hunting's a big thing.
It is,
So,
yeah.
what is it that you hunt for?
Specifically, white-tailed deer.
Off topic, but when you do this, I mean, how long does something like that last?
So the season's typically, I think it's a week, maybe two, and you can spend as much time as you want out in a field or a deer stand waiting to find what you want. We would typically do a morning session and an evening session. So you leave before sunlight, you're in your stand well before sunlight hours, and then you sit until about break of sun. And then you'd go in for a little bit, is what we typically do. And then we go back out hours before evening comes and the sun starts to set. So you get that peak movement time. So there's a good amount of time invested.
Very cool. But when you land yourself a deer, how long does the deer feed you for?
Oh my gosh, it can be quite a while. It also just depends on what you decide to put that into. My family does a lot of venison, so you'll get like the venison steaks or deer jerky sort of a thing. I took home a bit of a trophy buck a few years ago, the last season that I had hunted, and that one is still going, and it's good. Like, it's not bad. You seal it up and freeze it, and you're
Right.
still eating off of it, which is quite a reward, really, to be able to feed yourself. My parents always joke about how when I was little and I got my very first deer, the first thing I said to my dad was, "I've now supplied for the family."
There you go, right? And it's true. It's a true statement. I mean, if
Right?
nothing else, you're able to feed yourself. So that's an
Exactly.
awesome thing. All right, getting back on track for music here, but what do you feel was the turning point for you? At what point was it that things started to come together?
Yeah, I think I had a good pressure cooker of things happening for a little bit. I had quite a few songs come out in one year. I did an EP released as singles and then followed by another single called Wherever I Go. And after that, I released a couple other songs, but I think the tables really started to turn and things really started moving for me when I released my song Let Me Go. And that was really the kind of song that just hits you because it's loud, it's heavy, it's a big moment. It's kind of Carrie Underwood-ish. It's still a song that people ask for, and it's still one of my favorite songs to play. And that really changed things up for me and kind of helped me to affirm my standing in Nashville.
Well, compared to your other songs, that's a more powerful vocal. Do you feel like that's helping you?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. I feel like I really found my voice when it came to that song compared to the other songs. I was also so young in a lot of those beginning songs. And still had that prime teenage voice that is very beautiful, but sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm just so little. But I feel like I became myself when it came to Let Me Go.
You mentioned that. I mean, I noticed listening to your music that your voice sounds so much, your singing voice sounds so much more mature than your speaking voice. I mean, it's just a deeper, richer, more powerful type voice.
Right.
So
Yeah.
very, very impressive. Very impressive.
Thank you.
I know, I believe it was Wherever I Go was recorded over at Benchmark.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy being over at Benchmark?
Of course.
It's one of
It's
the
so
key
cool.
studios in Nashville.
It is. And I didn't even know that I was doing anything there until a few days before it happened. And I walked in, and these guys were all playing my song. And I was like, they literally just got this on a sheet 1 second ago. And here they go.
Right. That's the best part about Nashville. I mean,
It is.
people just you just don't understand until you get to see it for the first time when you go in and they chart the song right in front of you, and then you make copies, hand it out. Next thing you know, they're playing it in the room like they've played it their whole lives.
It's wild.
It's an absolutely amazing experience. And that studio is one of the very first studios I worked in when I moved to Nashville. It was called Emerald
Wow.
Studios at that time. But the thing I remember the most is like the sand was coming out of the walls and on the floor and stuff.
Yeah.
It was just a beautiful sounding room. It was just really, really nice.
Yeah, it's a great, great studio.
Do you happen to remember the team of people that you worked with?
Yeah, I had Smith Curry and his entire group, Grady Saxman, you name them. They were all in there. And that was my first time doing anything like that. And I fell in with a band that was and is incredible. They play so well. And these guys play all the time. So you know that they look at a song and they're like, yeah, we got this.
How nervous were you?
Oh, I was so nervous. That was my first time ever even being in a room like that. So walking into a room, I think it was almost better that I didn't know what to expect because it kept me on my toes in a way where I was ready for anything. And my producer was like, you're going to walk in and you're going to be surprised because they're going to chart it in front of you. They're going to ask you if you like this, this, or that. And then they're going to go and do it. And if you don't like anything, you have to
speak up. And you have quick. To
speak, exactly. Speak up very fast. And it literally all happened like that. And I remember they started playing and I was like, I love this. This is exactly what I heard in my head, if not even more.
Right.
Which is wild.
Who produced it?
Butter Mark Fortney, who was in Trailer Choir.
Very nice. Look at you. You yeah. just go for the best of the best and everything, right?
We try.
Do you find that the industry has any sort of expectations of you?
Yeah. I mean, I think they almost have to. You have to have expectations for what you want people to meet, I guess. But when it comes to art, art is subjective. So what might be one thing to me is different to you. And I think sometimes it's hard to put bounds on that. So there's definitely expectations to a degree, but I wouldn't say there's anything too crazy, at least I feel.
What are some of the expectations?
I think it's just a level of professionalism and ability to do what you're doing and in your craft, to be able to write and to be able to perform and to be marketable.
Well, that's the biggest thing right
the
there.
The biggest thing.
I mean, again, it goes back to being in business, and record labels are pretty much a bank, and they want to make right. the return on their investment for sure.
Right.
Do you find any challenges or any of the expectations are a little heavier being so young?
I think sometimes it's hard to completely understand what's at hand sometimes, and not that you don't see the entire future in the situation, but you're put in a position to make a lot of decisions very quickly sometimes. And I'm someone that likes to sit on things a little bit and really try to get a big picture and understand exactly what it is that I'm doing. I'm very precise. So sometimes it does push me to be a little bit quicker on things, which is probably better for me anyways.
So do you have a manager?
I am independent right now. I don't have a manager, but I do work with a team that kind of helps me do things.
Yeah, no, I've met part of your team. You got a pretty hefty team. but if you're not working with management and you're dealing with these decisions, so do you have anybody that you can bounce ideas and thoughts with?
Yeah, yeah. My team over at Burning Ground and Core is very, very helpful. And Butter, who's produced my stuff, I know there are so many people that I could text in a second and be like, hey, I have this thing that I'm trying to decide on and I just would really love to hear your opinion on it. Maybe you can help educate me a little bit more than I might be on it. That's the beauty of Nashville, really, is your friends become your family. And when you find the right friend group, you can lean on people and mentors that you can ask questions to. And that's largely instrumental.
Oh, absolutely. So give us an example of what some of these decisions might be.
Yeah, for some of it, it's even just where you want to go to distribute your music and what that means for you and trying to, for me, I'm looking at releasing songs right now. So it's where do you go? Like, who do you want to do for producing and what level of production do you want to do? Do you want to just go in hard and do the big stuff or do you want to just kind of work your way there? Some of the decisions for me are more business based in deals, when deals come in and trying to understand contracts. And thankfully I have somebody that does that for me. So I'm able to try my best to make the best educated decision. But a lot of the things that are tougher for me is when it comes down to a contract and trying to just really make sure I'm seeing everything for what it's worth.
Sure. And there's so many different contracts.
Oh yeah. And they're so, I think just the name and the word contract and knowing you have to sign your name to something is very daunting. And for me, I take it very seriously. If I'm putting my name to paper, I want to know what it is. You have to have good people around you.
You had mentioned your producer again. Were you able to select your producer?
Yeah, actually, my photographer ran into Vinny, who is also in trailer choir, at the gym or something like that.
Of course, that's where we all meet people.
Right. And they just got into talking. He's like, I have a friend that's looking for someone to produce some songs for them. And then I met Butter, who's been largely instrumental for me and kind of has been a bit of a mentor for me as well.
So in your case, did the producer select the musicians?
Yeah, he's the one that had selected the bands to play on the songs.
And do you know who engineered it?
Yeah, we've had a few different people. One that comes, I'm trying to remember all the names. I'm losing them at the moment. You put me in the hot seat and I lost names.
See, that's the way it works here.
Billy Decker, who's great. And I knew it would come to me eventually.
There you go. I mean, it's a great group of people. So, I mean, your music sounds amazing.
Thank you.
Let's go beyond the powerhouse vocals and everything that you have. The instrumentation, the production, the mixes, every single piece of your product sounds great. Which is a very, very good thing. But we could take that a step further and talk about your videos for a second, because your videos are also very, very impressive. They're very cinematic. They've got that wide aspect ratio. I mean, who put the videos together and how'd that all come about?
Yeah, that's actually the same guy that found my producer for me. He goes by Squeaks on Tour. Yeah, really. Squeaks on Tour. His name is Justin Mayot of B-Cam. And I've worked with him since I was 19. Him and his wife. They're really family to my entire family. My parents love them. They know my brothers. They know my entire family. They've met my uncles, my grandparents, you name it. I've worked with them for a while. And we've grown together, too, which is the most exciting part about it, is while I'm developing my artistry, they've been growing their business and their photography and their videography. And it's kind of cool to have been with the same person so long, because they know what I like and I know what they want to do. And we get to bounce off of each other.
So when you work with all these people, is there any memorable collaboration that you have?
Oh, my gosh. Honestly, all of them are. But so many of the firsts with everyone have been so special. And like, speaking of Let Me Go earlier, was really, really special, because we all knew we were kind of onto something. We all knew that it was cool and that it was bigger than anything else that I had done, and that we were really kind of making that turning lap in the game. And when we were working on that, everybody was stoked about it. And that emotional process was so, so special.
Do you find that people are looking up to you as a role model?
Yeah, which is scary sometimes, because I don't want to do something silly. But yeah, a lot of the times, yeah.
So do you have people reaching out to you through social media, or are they coming up to you at shows? I mean, how are they approaching you?
It's kind of a little bit of both. And I always take the young people that followed me very seriously, because I remember being their age and looking at different people on social media. I remember when Instagram became a thing. So anybody that was on Instagram at that time, I was looking up to and wanting to mirror and do things like them. And while I am also older than them, so there are different things that come my way that would be much more appropriate for my age versus theirs, I also realized that young people are really impressionable, and I want to make sure that I'm honoring myself. And by honoring myself, I honor the people that look up to me.
That's cool. Do they bring you gifts?
Sometimes, yeah. I've the sweetest bracelets, kind of like the Taylor Swift thing. Like, I got a Minnesota Wild one a couple weeks ago, which was so fun. And it was so fitting. And little signs. I keep them all. I have a little box of all of them, drawings and things or notes that people write. It's one of my favorite parts about all of this.
It's got to be cool, right? It's got to make you feel great.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, I think it's pretty cool. And I think it's good that you have the opportunity to connect with people. And if social media is allowing you to do that, that's fantastic.
Right. And it's so accessible. How could you not?
What is it that you feel that is most important for you to focus on to continue your success?
For me, it's really just focusing on my writing and making sure that what I'm writing is true to who I am. And that obviously changes. Like, the music I released when I was 19 is very different for me now at 24. But just writing what I'm feeling is the most important thing to me, and not viewing it as too superficial. And sometimes you want to write something that's deep and heavy, but sometimes you're like, I just need to write something, and something is better than nothing. And my favorite thing about all these songs that I've slated for this year is that they all feel so uniquely me and deep, but then so like bright and poetic and but easy, and you can just listen to it and it's not too much, but it's also just enough, and it leaves you wanting more. And I think for me, that's been the most important thing, because I took a little break on co-write specifically for a little bit and playing writer's rounds, because I was finding myself really, really tired. Like, I'd go into a writing room and I just couldn't do it. And I felt bad because I was in this fog where I wasn't able to contribute in the ways that I was. And I felt really rejuvenated taking a little step back. It wasn't obviously very long, but the little step back was very huge for me, I think, to be able to write the stuff that I have now that is coming up. I don't think I would have been able to write it if I didn't take a break.
When will we have the opportunity to hear it?
Yeah, we have one slated for the end of May. And then it is about every 7-ish weeks after that. We have 4 songs. So you'll get a large dose of Darian Lee for a while. And then we got to start working on the new stuff.
Right. It never stops, right?
No.
Once one's done, you just got to move on to the next.
Exactly.
So what are you hoping people take away from it?
I'm hoping that people take away just how much I've grown in the year since I've released music. My last single that I put out is Blame It On Me, which I think was kind of a good end cap to that chapter for me. And not that anything's wildly changing, but just the fact that I've evolved and I've grown, and I'm hoping that people can hear that growth as much as I feel it.
Do you plan on doing videos for these upcoming releases?
Yeah, I'm actually shooting the cover and everything for the one in May tomorrow, and then the music video not long after that. So it's all in the works.
And here I am keeping you up late to do this. That's nice.
Oh, no, it's okay. I played this morning, was in studio after that, and we had this. I've been looking forward to this. I knew I'd just get to chat your ear off.
I love it. My wife doesn't talk to me anymore, so this is fantastic. So how do you define success now?
I think success can be very differently defined for everyone. For me, as long as I'm able to do music for a living and I can support myself and I'm happy, that is success. Obviously, there's certain things that I'd love to do. Like, I'd love to play the Opry, stadium tours, you name it. But if I'm able to do music and make a living and I'm happy, that's all the success I need.
That's definitely a fantastic way of looking at it. So, I mean, there's so many things I want to know. Christmas, you cover a lot of Christmas songs. Do you find covering somebody else's Christmas song is challenging?
Sometimes. I feel like Christmas songs are unique in the way that we typically don't touch them, because sometimes people, you don't want to do too much. Like, Christmas songs are already a lot. You only get them for a little bit. And there is notoriously songs where people are like, oh, they just did too much. We like the classics. And I'm one of those that likes a classic, but I do like the new renditions as well. But I am a sucker for the old classic Christmas music. And I felt like I could put a new spin on that, but still keeping it classic to the originals, which is definitely a challenge, but I was in the right room with the right musicians to do it.
Well, I even asked that question just because Christmas songs are so simple in nature, mm-hmm. right? But to sing a simple song in a simple way and capture everybody is challenging.
Right.
And what most people do to combat that is they overdo it. They try to oversing it or try to impress you in some other way. And that's where that balance is. To me, I'd rather hear the song sang the way it's supposed to be sung and have that person capture me with their emotion.
Right. And those classic songs are all about dynamics too in singing. which was really fun for me because I've had vocal coaches my entire life. I've been very vocally trained. So being able to show off some of those dynamics and the different things that I knew, it was really the perfect opportunity for it.
What month did you record them?
We recorded them in October, which was honestly late. Like,
we usually do them in July.
Right, exactly.
Did you decorate the studio?
We did not, but I took out all of my Christmas decorations very early to shoot all the videos, and I didn't really feel like putting it away. So we decorated for Christmas really early.
I love it. What is your go-to comfort food at Loveless Cafe?
Ooh, I just like their biscuits, to be honest, and throw some jelly on them. But I think the last time I was there, I did chicken and waffles.
A very Tennessee thing, right?
Very much so. Everything is chicken.
Yeah. Nashville hot chicken is my favorite.
So good.
I know there's Hattie B's and stuff, but I like going to the original, going out to like Prince's hot chicken and stuff like that.
Right. Man. Yeah.
Love it. I took my daughter. We went to see the Arctic Monkeys.
Oh my gosh.
So I took her and her friend. We drove down to Nashville and we went to Hattie B's first. And my daughter loved it. She just loves spicy food. So I love it, but her friend almost killed me. So she wanted to strangle me that night.
Fair. It's tough on some of us.
Well, I mean, Hattie B's isn't as hot as some of the others, but it's up there, especially for a young kid who's never had hot food before.
Right.
But you like the Arctic Monkeys?
I do, yeah. That's why I was very impressed and very excited that you saw that.
Yeah. It was at the Ascend Amphitheater.
Right. I'm jealous. It's probably a great show.
I mean, they enjoyed it. They had a good time. It was good for me to just get to experience music with them like that. So
yeah, that's so special.
So speaking of right downtown, I know we talked about Jason Aldean's place, but what's your favorite place to play down there?
Yeah, I love Jason Aldean's. I play Miranda Lambert's Casa Rosa a lot. I was just there this morning. That's probably my other favorite one to play at, to be honest.
You were there this morning.
I was, yes.
You played there this morning.
Yes. So,
okay. And people, again, something else people don't realize, they open at 10 a.m. So what time did you play?
I played 11 to 2.
11 to 2.
I got off easy. It wasn't 10. I got off for 11.
Does that affect you singing that early in the morning?
If I get up early enough, so it's not right away when I've woken up and I warm up properly and do all the things that I need to do, it's typically okay. I start a little softer, so I normally pray that people don't ask for intense songs for a little bit, so I'm able to really warm up. But I do a good long warm up on my drive in the traffic all the way there, drink some hot tea, and do all the things that I need to.
Lord knows you have enough time with the traffic.
Exactly.
I mean, even downtown, the traffic's just ridiculous these days.
It's wild.
What side of town do you live on?
I am East Nashville.
So you're on the east side? So you have to cross the river to come in? It's not bad. You like living over there?
Yeah. I have a lot of friends.
That's also where Prince's Hot Chicken is, on the east side.
Yeah.
Man, now I'm hungry for hot chicken.
We can't talk about it too much.
I know it's still early in your career, but have you had any setbacks that have knocked you on your feet a little bit?
This last summer, I had some vocal issues that kind of arose, and that really kind of changed everything for me. I had a good while of being completely silent, and thankfully I came out on the other side and I didn't have nodes or didn't need surgery or anything like that. So I had the lesser of the impacts of what vocal damage can be, but it was a very, very difficult time, a very emotional time, and just trying to get through that without losing hope that I could start playing again and start doing what I'm doing. And thankfully, I mean, Vanderbilt is here. You have so many people that are so well equipped to help you. And my boss, when it comes to downtown, I always say boss because he doesn't really feel like my boss. He feels more like a friend. But he was so, so instrumental and so helpful and incredibly understanding when it came to me not being able to do shifts and not being able to play like I was. And I'd just been given the opportunity to start doing full band stuff downtown. So to have gone from like really feeling like I was right there. I have all these opening act shows for the entire summer, and I went from all of that to nothing, to just trying to stay as quiet as I could so I can keep my opening act shows. And
how scared were you?
It's so scary. It is so, so scary.
You think the career might have been over?
Yeah, I had a moment with my vocal coach where he kind of talked me off a cliff when I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do anymore. Like, I don't know if this is going to work. And he was like, this is just one small road bump. We will get through it, which I'm very grateful for him.
It's got to be tough going through something like that. How much time did you spend over at Vandy?
I still kind of go in once every other month or so to keep checking in and little coaching sessions to make sure I'm not tense or doing like catching up on old habits, I guess I should say. But I was there every single week for a couple months, scoped many times.
That's so nasty. That's gonna
hurt. It is an experience in itself.
Not fun at all.
No.
So when you're doing this and you're going through all of this, did you have to change the way you sing?
I kind of had to relearn how I was singing. I had an injury that basically, like, if I was an athlete playing basketball, you hurt your ankle, you roll your ankle, and then you keep playing on it. So you're going to start straining and using other muscles that you probably shouldn't be using. And that's exactly what I went through with my voice. I was using different parts of my voice that I wasn't using before. So trying to relearn how to shut off the muscles that shouldn't have been working and turn on and reactivate the muscles that needed to be working is really wild. It's not even comprehensible, and they were able to help me so much, and I couldn't be more grateful. Honestly, I feel like I owe them everything.
What are you most grateful for?
My physical therapist over there, my voice therapist. She was so understanding and so patient, and when I would get frustrated, she was very, very, very patient and trying to get me to get out of my head and just do things, just to try. And I've had many friends go through this in a much more intense way, so I can see all the different spectrums of it. And I think also having had friends that had gone through it as recently as they had made me realize how serious what I was looking at, and if I continued to go the way that I was going, what that could be. And so also just appreciative of all my friends and my family that kind of helped me pause for a while and take a rest. And that's really when I took a break from writing too, because I needed to break on everything. So songs weren't getting done. I wasn't writing. I was just sitting still for a while.
What were you doing?
I spent a lot of time at the beach because Nashville isn't too far of a drive. So instead of playing, I spent my weekends driving to the beach and staying at a hotel every once in a while, just sitting out in the sun. It was like the one thing where I felt like being silent wasn't abnormal, because I didn't know other people at the beach. My boyfriend and I would go and we just play in the water, whatever, lie in the sun. And it wasn't weird to be silent. It's challenging to go throughout a day and not be able to speak, because that's how you contact people. And I have so much, especially since then, appreciation and just seeing how difficult it would be to not be able to do that, and how important it is to even know how to do sign language. Honestly, I was looking into some of it because I was like, I need to know how to do something. I need to know how to say something that isn't me just typing on my phone and being like, here, this is what I'm trying to say right to you.
I laugh because my daughter, the 14-year-old, for the past few years, I don't know when it started, it was like 3-4 years ago, just out of the blue, she came up to me talking in sign language. No yeah. reason why, you know, nothing. She just, something she learned on her own. And she, when I say learned it, I mean she learned it. She's fluent wow. in sign language now.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I only learn like general things and hopes that maybe someone would be able to understand it. And most people were right. very lost. So
my 14-year-old taught the 2-year-old.
Oh, wow.
The baby communicates. She sits there and, you know, please. And she says all these things.
Yeah.
You know, more, and, you know, just all the different things she says.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Even now that she can speak, she still does the symbols.
Yeah.
More, please.
It's like second nature.
I'm like, oh, wow, good for you. All right, my friend. Well, we do this thing here we call Unsung Heroes, where we take a moment to shine the light on somebody's work behind the scenes, somebody that may have helped you along the way. Do you have anybody you would like to shine a little light on?
Oh, my gosh. honestly, the people that I'm working with right now producing these singles, Lenny and AJ, who are incredible, incredible writers and producers, and we've kind of just been diving headfirst into it right now, and I'm doing three songs with them, and it's just been the most enjoyable process, especially because they are artists themselves, and so working with an artist that is producing is a very different vibe, because they also hear me when I'm saying different things, and everybody I've worked with throughout all of music has always listened and always been very patient, but working with them especially has been very, very, very nice.
A big thanks to Darian for taking the time to share his stories with us, and thank you for taking the time to hang with me here. I really do appreciate it. If you know another music fan that would enjoy this episode, please be sure to share this with them. You can do that and find the links to everything mentioned over at jfranzi.com/episode63. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Jay Franzi Show. Make sure you visit us at jfranzi.com. Follow, connect, and say hello. This episode has been brought to you by VR Knives, your source for 100% custom knives made by a true rock star. So, if you're in the market for a new piece of art, reach out to VR Knives. 407-421-5528. 407-421-5528.